Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I am here to free you from constantly worrying about what you're eating, from always counting calories, carbs, and fat grams. I'm going to help you get a healthier, happier attitude towards food so you can lose weight and get on with your life. So if you'd like to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what's eating at you and weighing on you. So today is October 31st. Happy Halloween. And I have a guilt-free treat for you today. By the way, what do you think is the scariest part of Halloween? Because lots of people tell me it's not the zombies, it's not the ghosts, it's not the scary haunted houses, it's not the creepy stuff that goes on in Halloween. It's the candy. The candy is the scariest part of Halloween for many, many, many people. So today I want to give you a Halloween treat that is 100% guilt-free and calorie-free too. So I'm going to give you my five tips for how to get through Halloween. And I originally shared these tips for an LA-based blog called Entertain Me with Michael Scheinefeld. I'm going to go over all of them kind of at once, and then we'll do more of a deep dive into each one of them. So here they are, my five tips to get through Halloween happily. Tip number one, afraid of the dark. The scariest thoughts are the dark ideas you have about yourself. Keep out thoughts like, I suck. I'm too fat. I'm too stupid. I'm ugly. Or who would love me? I'm not good enough. Those thoughts are scary and they're bad and they just make you feel terrible about yourself. That is truly frightening. And of course, when you feel bad about yourself, what do? You might be more likely to use food for comfort or distraction or to numb out, to escape your own scary voice. Tip number two, got ghosts? If the ghosts of the past are haunting you, it's time to deal with them. If you had a critical or judgmental parent, teacher, sibling, grandparent, relative of some kind, and you find yourself now being equally critical or judgmental or abusive or whatever to yourself, that mean voice belongs to others, not to you. You're being haunted by the past, even if they're still alive. They are haunting you. You got to find your authentic, real, true voice and see yourself as you are, not through the eyes of others. Tip number three, give yourself a treat. Yes, give yourself a treat. If you find yourself saying, I'm going to be good this Halloween, I'm not going to eat a single piece of candy, not a single piece of candy or a bite of sugar will pass my lips. Or you say, oh, I was so bad because I ate that pumpkin cheesecake. Then first of all, you're setting yourself up for binging, because who can go through Halloween and not have a single piece of candy? Like, what happens is you don't have a single piece of candy at Halloween, and then you go home and you eat the leftover pizza that you had from the other day. That's how that works. So deprivation, or the anticipation of deprivation, leads to overeating or binging. Deprivation leads to having more. So if you give yourself permission to have candy, you may actually eat less. You can decide whether you want it or not. And I can't tell you how many people have been like, yeah, you know, when I gave myself permission to have it, that like Hershey's mini thing wasn't really very good. So I only had one bite. And then I was like, yeah, this isn't very good chocolate. So sorry, Hershey's. And then they didn't eat it. But when you're like, I can't eat it, so I must eat it now. You don't care whether it's good or bad. You're just sort of shoving it in your mouth. And if you're saying that you're bad because you ate candy, or you're bad because you ate that pumpkin cheesecake or pumpkin pie or whatever you're eating, then you're tying your character to what you're eating, and that's not good. You are not bad because you ate something with sugar. It is not a character flaw, because our minds are listening to us, even if we know it's just an expression. I've heard that. Dr. Nina, like, you're so picky with language. Like, it's just an expression. Yeah, it's an expression, but your mind is hearing what you're saying to yourself. And if you're saying, oh, I was bad because of this, you know, you are going to feel bad. You're not going to feel good if you're telling yourself you were bad. Okay, that gets me all fired up, as you can see. Tip number four, living a zombie life. Do you feel as if you're the walking dead, doing the same thing day after day, not enjoying your life to the fullest? If so, bring yourself back to life. Think about the one thing you've been waiting to do. One day I'll do this. One day, when I do that, when I lose weight, then I'm going to do that thing I've always wanted to do. And make today the day you start working towards that one thing you want to do, or more than one thing. If you want to run a marathon, go for a walk. Go for a short run. If you want to start dating, go online. Check out who's on there. Go tell your friends you're available. Take some kind of action. Don't wait until you're at a certain weight on the scale. Don't wait, W-A-I-T, and don't wait, W-E-I-G-H-T. Don't wait for the number on the scale to be some perfect number before you start living your life. Number five, last tip, be playful. Be playful. Remember the fun of going out with your friends on Halloween? Remember how fun that was? My daughter just turned 11, and she's getting dressed up as a nerd. She's so cute, and she's so excited, and her friends are all, like, texting back pictures of what they look like and what they're wearing tonight, and it's so cute, and it's so light and playful and fun. So Halloween is about being with other people. It's about dressing up. It's about having fun. Oh, I'm getting a call. Hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina. Sorry, I was so caught up in what I was saying, I didn't even see my call board.
Hi, Dr. Nina, Nicole here. How are you?
Hi, Nicole, good to hear from you.
Thanks, nice to hear your voice. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you, too.
Sorry, say it again?
I said happy Halloween to you, too.
Thank you. I actually have a question kind of related to today. There's just, like, candy and chocolate everywhere, and I, like, love Snickers and Reese's, and I just, like, want to know how I can stop myself from eating, like, all the candy.
Okay, here, it's going to sound very counterintuitive, but if you're already, okay. What I'm about to tell you is similar to what I've told you on other calls, because if you're saying, if I eat some, I'm going to eat all of it, right? How can I stop myself from eating all the candy? There's this implied notion that if you start eating it, you're just not going to be able to stop, which does tie into what I was just saying about the anticipation of deprivation. But if you tell yourself, I am going to have, like, you know, four mini pieces of candy, or, like, whatever it is that's sort of reasonable, like, which ones do I want? Do I want Snickers? Do I want Skittles? Do I want whatever? Mars balls? I don't know my candy. But if you just tell yourself, hey, which ones do I want? And give yourself permission to have it. And when you have it, instead of thinking I shouldn't be eating this, oh my God, think, do I like this? Is this good? So I remember a time when I first put this into action myself, and I had always thought, like, I loved Snickers so much, which is why I couldn't have them, because I was going to eat them all, kind of like what you're saying. And then the first time I actually went and bit into a Snickers with the intention of, like, enjoying it, I realized it wasn't as good as I thought it was. Mm. You know? So when you have it.
Okay. The thing is, like, okay, so I get that. Like, don't deprive yourself. Like, just have it. But like with even with the peanut butter, remember you told me to eat peanut butter every day?
Yes.
Okay, I have to say I probably haven't gone as overboard with it as I normally would because I'm giving myself permission to have it.
Yes.
But I still feel like I'm having too much of it. And I still feel a little bit guilty for eating it. I don't know. It's
yes.
like not helping as like it helped a little bit, but like
right
what
now,
else can I do?
You have to keep doing it because right now I'd say maybe you're 60% on board with the idea that if you allow yourself to have peanut butter or candy or anything else that you'll actually stop eating it as much or you won't binge on it or you won't overeat it. I'm going to say 60% on board with that idea. Am I?
Yeah, I would say, yeah.
A little more than 50, but not much more.
Yeah.
So right now, you're only 60% on board, which means there's a whole 40% of your mind that's going, this is BS. How am I going to lose weight if I eat peanut butter? How am I going to lose weight?
Right.
Or how am I going to, how's eating candy going to stop me from eating more candy? This is ridiculous. Like, so the more that you do it, the greater the percentage will grow. So when you're like at 90% on board, that 10%, you'll barely even hear it. And then you'll be 100% on board. So you just have to keep practicing it.
Okay. I will work on that and I will eat a Snickers and a Reese's Pieces and enjoy it and savor it and allow myself to have it so I don't end up eating the whole bucket.
Yes, Nicole, I want you to eat a Snickers and Reese's Pieces and whatever else you want. I want you to eat it. I want you to call me next week and tell me how much you liked it. You've got to enjoy it and give yourself permission.
Okay, I will do that.
And when you feel guilty, if there's a, because you've got that 40% voice, right? So if that 40% voice is like, this isn't good, just say, hey, you know what? I've tried it your way. You're steering me the wrong direction. You don't work. I'm not listening to you.
Okay.
40% voice.
Okay. So self-talk. All right.
Positive
self-talk.
I will
try that.
And one last thing. When you feel guilty, guilt is about doing something wrong or about not doing something you think you should do. So challenge the idea that you are guilty for some perceived crime, the crime of eating sugar, right? Challenge the guilt. Say, wait a minute, I'm not actually doing anything wrong.
Okay. There should be no guilt because it's really like a perceived thing that I'm doing wrong. It's not actually wrong to eat food and to enjoy it. Okay.
Right?
I get that.
That's why we have food and not, like, that's why we're not eating pellets like astronauts eat or what I imagine astronauts eat. You know, just pellets of nutrition. Food is supposed to be enjoyable.
Yeah.
Like last week when you said to me that pizza was bad, I'm like, no, pizza's not bad. Nothing is bad.
Yeah.
It's just how healthy is it? And we all want to have unhealthy things at times in moderation to make life, you know, yummy. Not life, but, you know, we're supposed to enjoy food. So, enjoy it and have a happy Halloween.
Okay.
And let me know
Thank
how it goes.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nina.
You're
I'll
so welcome.
Back soon.
Okay. Bye, Nicole.
Bye.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a really hard idea to kind of wrap around your head that eating something you've spent maybe years or decades thinking that you're not supposed to eat is how you're going to stop eating it as much. But I can tell you, as counterintuitive as it sounds, it works. It works. When you're no longer eating out of deprivation or the anticipation of deprivation, when you're no longer eating for comfort, then you can choose to have ice cream or Snickers or pizza or whatever it is that's on your bad food list and actually enjoy it instead of have it with that horrible simultaneous guilt and disgust that goes along with eating it or overeating it. That's the worst. All right, so I was before Nicole called, I was just on my last tip, which is to be playful and have fun. So often we forget to have fun as adults. And then you know what? Food, for some people, becomes fun. And they're overly dependent on food for the sweetness in their lives. And that's not good. You need to have the fun that comes of just being playful and relating to people. I mean, it doesn't have to be people. Just doing things that you like, having fun. That's the key. So, okay, so which of these five strategies on how to treat yourself on Halloween resonates the most with you? Let me know, 818-602-4929. Again, 818-602-4929. Okay, so now let's go into all of these in a little bit more depth. Let's do the deep dive into each one of those tips. So tip number one, the scariest thoughts are the dark ideas you have about yourself. Again, when you feel bad about yourself, you're more likely to use food for comfort, for distraction, to just go into that, what people call the food zone, like totally numbed out. You're not thinking, you're not feeling, you're just in the zone. So what do you do? How do you change that negative self-talk? So here's some advice from a Psychology Today article called Four Ways to Stop Beating Yourself Up Once and for All. I tell you, they had me at the title. Four Ways to Stop Beating Yourself Up Once and for All. Way number one. Well, let me do a little preamble before I get to the four ways. So if you're like most people, you know your inner critic all too well. It is the voice in your head that judges you, that doubts you, belittles you, constantly tells you you're not good enough. It says negative, hurtful things to you, things you would never say to anyone else. Things like, you're such an idiot, or I'm such an idiot, or, oh, I'm such a phony, if they only knew, or I never do anything right, I'll never succeed, I'll never fill in the blank. I'm not fill in the blank enough. So as I was saying before, right, what you say to yourself, is heard by you. So everything you say to yourself matters. That inner critic is not just a voice. It's actually harmful. It inhibits you. It limits you. It stops you from pursuing the life that you truly want to live. It robs you of peace of mind and emotional well-being, and it can even lead to just serious depression, because if you're always attacking yourself, you're going to feel like, no, stop. Horrible voice. You're going to get depressed. You're going to get anxious. So changing the way you talk to yourself is, pardon the expression, critical. Now that inner critic can serve multiple purposes that on the surface you think you need it, right? It can make you feel like you're trying to do right in some way by trying to be better, to achieve more, to be a better person. But using self-criticism for those reasons instead of positive self-talk, it's the same as choosing a punishment over a reward. Punishment can deter certain behaviors. Oh, hold that thought. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hey, Dr. Nina. It's Brian from Chicago. How are you?
Hi, Brian from Chicago. Good to hear from you. What's up?
So I have not been able to listen to the show this morning, so I don't know if this is something you've already covered or not. But I was just wondering about, you know, today being Halloween and it just abounds with candy, and that probably is very triggering for people. So do you have any strategies or recommendations for people who find the holiday to be just, you know, one gigantic temptation?
Yes, in fact, it's so funny. My two calls today have basically been the same question. So, and it bears repeating because it's kind of a message you can't hear enough on Halloween. So my previous caller who asked essentially the same question, how do I stop myself from eating everything if I, you know, eat a little? I told her, and I'm telling the audience and you, that that the anticipation of deprivation or the experience of deprivation leads to overeating or binging. If you say, I'm not going to have that, and you have it, you feel guilty. And then when you feel guilty, you're more likely to eat more, or you have that all or nothing, I ate one, I might as well eat 100 kind of mentality. So the way that you approach it is essential. If you say to yourself, I give myself permission to have candy. I'm going to choose, you know, four pieces of candy or five, whatever. Those mini things are so small, you know, Pick a number. Say, which one do I want? And then when you have it, ask yourself if you enjoy it. I was saying to Nicole that the first time I gave myself permission to have Snickers, which I thought Snickers were my undoing, I loved Snickers. The first time I gave myself permission to have it and I actually like registered that I was eating it and tasted it, I thought, you know, this isn't all that good. This isn't as good as I thought it was going to be. Like, it's okay, but it's not the be-all and end-all. So have what you want and enjoy it and figure out if this is something you really want. Enjoy it. And that way you're not setting yourself up for the overeating that comes with deprivation.
So in other words, kind of trust your ability to sort of self-regulate without being so strict on yourself.
Yeah, and it's easier to self-regulate. People say, oh, I have no willpower, I have no control. If I have one Snickers, I'll have all of them. But that's not true. It's easier to self-regulate when you allow your yourself to have a range of different kinds of foods. If you have the mentality of I can't have that, then that's what you want. You're going to want the thing you can't have. But if you tell yourself I can have it, then you can more easily regulate A, whether you really want it, and B, how much of it you're going to have.
Okay, well, that makes sense. And I think your reaction to the Snickers is probably only because you've never had white chocolate.
White chocolate is not chocolate. I'm sorry.
White chocolate is not chocolate because it's better than chocolate. It's sort of like saying sunshine is not gray rainstorms because it's better. White chocolate is the best. Trust me. You have white chocolate, you'll be having to like look up your own advice on how do I stop. It's that good.
Brian, I just have to disagree with you. White chocolate? No, it's not. It's too sweet.
The holidays are coming, Dr. Nina. The holidays are coming. I may have to send you white chocolate for the holidays.
No. I went on a chocolate tour in Boston a few years ago. I was there because one of my books was having a debut at the Psychoanalytic Association. And so I went so that was my excuse to go to Boston. And I took my daughter and we went on a pizza tour and we went on a chocolate tour. So I learned more about chocolate than you will ever know, Brian, unless you have been on the Back Bay chocolate tour in Boston. And the question of whether white chocolate is chocolate is up for debate among chocolate connoisseurs.
But what's not up for debate is that it's really good. Really good.
Well,
try some. That's all I'm saying. Okay. Just try some.
Then I hope you will allow yourself to have some without guilt and to enjoy it. To enjoy that stuff that's not really chocolate.
That's what I'll do.
Okay.
That's what I'll do. Thanks, Dr. Nina. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian. Happy Halloween.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Actually, if I think about my chocolate tour and my pizza tour, it really was an exercise in, you know, if you have something all the time, you will want less of it. Like even my daughter, I think she was 8 at the time, and she was just all about chocolate. So we went on the chocolate tour, and I'm telling you, by the last stop, I was just like, I never want to look at chocolate, smell chocolate, think about chocolate again. Enough with the chocolate, because we just got totally chocolated out. What was it about? It was a chocolate tour. You're supposed to have chocolate. And we went all over Boston eating it. Same with pizza. I was like, I cannot look at pizza again. If you have the attitude of I can't have it, then you don't get sick of it. You just want more of it, even if you feel sick. So I know it's a different paradigm. Totally different paradigm to get used to, but I promise you, it really does work. Just even if you're at 60% on board with it or even less, just give it a try and keep practicing, because giving yourself permission to have something and wondering, is it healthy or not healthy, as opposed to is it good or bad? Because then it's you're good or you're bad. And if you're good, really you want to feel good about yourself because you ate like celery? You want to feel bad about yourself because you ate pizza? Really? Feel bad about yourself because, you know, you stepped on a snail or something. My dog stepped on a snail last week. It was horrible. I felt so bad. Anyway, don't feel bad about yourself because of what you eat. Okay. So I was talking about the inner critic and how to counter that inner critic, because that those dark, scary thoughts, we gotta ghost bust them. So using negative self-talk is the same as choosing punishment over a reward. Punishment can deter certain behaviors in the short term, but rewards are much better for shaping new and lasting behaviors. So when you punish something for what they do wrong, that doesn't teach them how to do it right. Imagine a little kid learning to walk, a baby. If you scream at that baby and say, "You are so dumb. How can you not just stay on your own two feet? What's wrong with you, baby?" That would have a negative impact. Because babies, you know, they walk two steps, they fall. They walk two steps, they fall. If you're just saying, "Oh, there you go again, falling. You can't do anything right." Well, that baby's not going to feel very good now, is she or he? But if you say, "Wow, that's great. You took two steps. That's wonderful. You did great." That baby's going to feel good and good about herself. So when your inner critic is constantly labeling you in a negative way, it is demoralizing, and it shapes your basic sense of self, and it affects your ideas about who you are, and that's no good. Because in the example I just gave, a baby learning to walk, well, that baby is falling down, but that baby also is taking two or three steps. So which are you going to focus on, the falling down or the taking two or three steps? So focus on rewarding yourself and acknowledging what you're doing well and right, instead of, you know, your perceived deficits. Even if that critic is true, even if you're criticizing yourself over something, it's right. Maybe you are doing something you shouldn't do. That doesn't matter. Negative self-talk is never in your best interest. There's always a different, kinder, better, gentler way to treat yourself that doesn't involve negative labels and self-destructive mindsets. Remember, when you are mean to yourself, you feel bad. And when you feel bad, you're more vulnerable to using food to feel better. So in any situation, you can either focus on the steps you're taking or you can focus on falling down. But if you focus on falling down, you're going to feel bad. If you focus on the steps you are taking, you're encouraging yourself instead of discouraging yourself. That's going to make you feel better. All right, so here's some specific steps to help you silence that critic. One I've talked about before is don't talk to yourself in second person. So often we are super mean to ourselves when we talk to ourselves in second person. You know, people will come in to me and they'll say to me, "Oh, I really had the intention of enjoying that dinner, and I went saying, okay, I was gonna just, you know, have whatever was there, and I wasn't gonna feel bad about myself. And then I ate all this stuff, and on the way home, I was like, you have no control, you have no willpower, you are a loser." Well, notice how they go from "I'm just going to enjoy the party" to "you are a loser." When you use second person, which is talking to yourself in a you voice, that second person voice, that is the critic. That usually makes you feel bad. I have not had much experience with people who come in and they say, "I told myself, you got this, girl." Nope. More like the mean girl you voice. So don't talk to yourself in second person. Keep it on I. So we got to be aware of that second person, and that is one way to identify when you're talking to yourself in second person. you're talking yourself in a critical way. So one thing that you can do is notice that. And then another thing you can do is just when you start saying the you voice, try to repeat it back with I. You know, I'm such a loser is a lot harder to say than you're such a loser. Separate the critic from you. The inner critic really thrives when you mistake it for being part of you. But you were not born with an inner critic. That critic is a voice that you have internalized because of outside messages that you got. Either outside messages that you were overtly told, like, you know, people telling you you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, you're not as good as your brother, sister, whoever. Or in the absence of getting a lot of structure in your life, kids develop kind of a critical structure towards themselves. So they end up being super mean towards themselves, even if nobody is saying it to them. Another way to separate you from the critic is to give it a name. Give it a name, like Mean Girl or, you know, or That Bitch. One of my online program people calls her inner critic That Bitch. That bitch is at it again. And now that she's separated That Bitch from herself, she's not so much listening to the, you know, TB anymore. She's able to stand up to it. So give it a name. It could be an actual name. It could be a title. It could remind you of someone you know. And separate it from you. It's not you. It's not you. All right. Talk back to it. Even if you say, hey, you know what? Mean girl, I am not listening to you today. I do not want to hear what you have to say. I am not interested in your mean thoughts. I am not interested in anything you have to say. You're just going to try to make me feel bad. And I'm not having it today. Just talk back to it in your head, on a piece of paper, out loud. Just bring your own voice into your life more by speaking back to that voice. And what people usually find out is they have no idea until they start doing this how prevalent this mean voice is in their life, how critical they are to themselves, how harsh, how horrible. So talk back to it. Tell it you know that it is a liar and you are not listening to liars. You are choosing instead to be kind to yourself, and it can just shut the F up. Bye-bye, critical voice. Next step, replace the critic. And that means growing a supportive, cheerleading, good voice. The difference between the voice that says, oh, baby, you fell down after walking. You fell down again. You can't do anything right. Between that voice and the voice that says, good job, baby. You took three steps. That's awesome. So the more that you cultivate that kind of supportive, cheerleading, positive, not positive as far as denying negativity, but positive as far as cheering you on and being encouraging and responsive, that voice is going to eventually take over. Here is a trick to how to access that voice. Think about the way you talk to other people. Do you tell them, what, you are so whatever, you're a loser, you're never going to make it, if people knew who you really are, they wouldn't like you, I don't like you. No, you don't talk to your friends like that. You say nice things to them. I see this all the time in my group. Like people will say something, they're going through a hard time, and the whole group's like, oh, well, here's some ways to think about it, and I really hear you, and I so get it, and I relate to you, and I know you can get past this, and, you know, we're here with you. And then when it's their turn, they're like, I'm a total trash. All right, what? Where was that voice that you just used for the other person in the group? Where is that for you? So if you wouldn't say it, to a friend or someone you love, if you wouldn't say something to a friend, a child, or someone you love, don't say it to yourself. Great quote by Marcia Hutchinson, who's a body image expert. And she says, if you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left. So don't talk to yourself like that. Talk to yourself the way you talk to your friends. You will feel better. So the other thing to keep in mind is that we have kind of a mental filter. We have like a narrative, an idea that we have about ourselves. Like, I can't do, you know, this, or I'm not smart enough. And then whenever something happens in our lives that fits the narrative, we seize on it and say, aha, see, I'm not smart enough. Or, you know, people don't like me. And then you run into someone who's just kind of bitchy to you. You could say, see, people don't like me. There's proof. The problem with that is that we are filtering out everything that doesn't fit the narrative. So every time someone loves you, or you're super smart at something, or you do, you know, whatever it is that doesn't fit the narrative, somehow it just goes right by. Everything that fits the narrative sticks. So you want to kind of recognize what the narrative of that inner critic is, so that you can challenge it and look for other outcomes. If you think you're not smart enough, look for proof, actively look for proof that you are smart enough. If you think people don't like you, look for proof that people do like you. I remember someone once told me that she felt very slighted because it was her birthday, and she got something like 100 people wished her happy birthday on Facebook, but the one person that she wished would have wished her happy birthday did not. And so she extrapolated the evidence that, you know, that person doesn't like her. And I'm like, but 100 other people do like you. So it's really important to look at the totality of the evidence and look at what your mental filter is, and don't filter out the things that don't fit your negative view. Look at where you actually are likable, lovable, smart, good enough, etc. Okay, so tip number two, if the ghosts of the past are haunting you, it is time to deal with them. It is time to do some ghost busting. If you had a critical parent, teacher, sibling, relative, and you find yourself being equally critical to yourself, then that critical voice, we just talked about it, belongs to other people. It does not belong to you. It is not your voice. Often that is the critical voice is from the past. So if you're a human on this planet, chances are that you have suffered something traumatic in the past. When we don't resolve our past, we just repeat it in the future. So the key to getting rid of these ghosts and the inner critic, it all kind of builds on each other, is to heal the past. So lots of people just want to say, it was in the past, I don't want to deal with it. It was in the past. It has nothing to do with my present. Well, actually, that's not true. Because so often, we repeat the past in the present. What we don't resolve is repeated. If we don't work through and heal experiences, painful experiences from the past, we repeat them in the present. And we do this in two different ways. Sometimes we're drawn towards people who are familiar with the hope that this person, unlike the original person, will give you a different outcome. So, for example, a person with an indifferent parent, just kind of indifferent, not neglectful, not horrible, just sort of indifferent. And the person with that parent hates that indifference, hates it, just wants to be loved and hugged and have some more vitality in the relationship. They hate it, but then they grow up and they are drawn towards indifferent people, like moths to a flame. They can't stay away, hoping on some level that this indifferent person will give them the love and attention that the indifferent original person failed to give them. Great example in psychoanalytic literature. An analyst tells a story of a patient who said he believed in love at first sight because he was in Paris and he saw this woman at a coffee patisserie. She was outside at a table, drinking coffee in a very particular way, and smoking a cigarette. So she's smoking, she's drinking, and he just looked at her and fell instantly madly in love with her. And there began a tumultuous relationship in which, you know, he never felt like he could get her attention, and it was just a dreadful, awful relationship. And actually, it was quite some time after this that he happened to be talking about his past with his analyst. And he said, "Yes, I remember, you know, going downstairs. I felt like I could never get my mother's attention. I would go downstairs and she'd be at the kitchen table and she'd be, you guessed it, smoking a cigarette and drinking a cup of coffee." So what happened was there was something about the image of this woman in Paris that so replicated that moment with his mom that he tried to get, like, what he couldn't get from his mom through this woman, which, of course, you know, indifferent people don't suddenly randomly turn into warm, fuzzy people. So all it does is, like, just repeat the past. The other way that the past is revived in the present is that you experience them as if they were people from the past, right? You experience them as if they're someone else. Things are interpreted. A colleague of mine once said that she was running a group, and a person in the group had developed this idea that the group leader, my friend, didn't like her. Of course, it was all about, if it's not one thing, it's your mother. It was all maternal transference, meaning that she was really experiencing the therapist as if she were her mother. And so one day, the therapist was, I don't know, she had like really bad cramps. And she was just kind of like not feeling her best. And she grimaced. And the person said, "See? You hate me. You just grimaced. You're thinking that you hate me and you wish I would leave." And she had all kinds of thoughts about what the therapist was thinking, when of course it had nothing to do with her. She was just having bad cramps. So that interpretation can make us think that people are the way that the people of the past were, instead of really experiencing people as they are in the present. Another important thing to do is to recognize the inner narrative that I was talking about before. Identify the beliefs you have about yourself as a result of what happened in the past. How are we doing? We're doing good on time. We're doing well on time. Okay, so some of these ideas, these beliefs that you may have, for example, here are a few. I am damaged goods. Nobody will ever love me. If I let go of my anger or my hurt, that means the perpetrator wins. I can't move on until I get an apology. I need someone else to fix this. I can't do it. I don't deserve to feel better. These are five of the most common ones, and here's the most common one. If I just ignore this, it'll go away. I just need to let it go. I just need to forgive and forget. I just need to move on. You know, people try to positive think it away. Yeah, you know what? No, that's not going to happen. Positive thinking does not make you heal the past. The only way out is through. You can't change what has happened in the past, but you can change how you respond to those painful experiences. You can change the narrative you have about yourself as a result of those painful experiences. You have the power to change the way you think about yourself by reinterpreting from a position of clarity what happened in the past. And when you heal the past, you're no longer going to repeat it in the present. So it's very, very powerful. You've got to heal. Otherwise, you're just a walking, you're just the walking wounded. You're full of these wounds of the past that whenever you touch up against something that's painful, it's excruciating. But when you heal, then someone might, you know, not like you, or they might snap at you, or they might do something, you know, you don't like, not so nice, and it won't hurt as much because you're healed. Okay, so I've been talking a lot. So tip number three today was give yourself a treat, and I've been talking a lot about that, about deprivation and how that sets you up for binge eating. And I just want to tell the story of, I'm so excited I get to tell this story at Halloween because it's about what happened at Halloween. So my husband and I took our daughter trick-or-treating this was last year. It feels like a couple of years ago. And she and her friends had like huge pillowcase, king-size pillowcases filled with candy, right? And she said to us, "I'm hungry." And my husband said, "Well, you have like, you know, all the candy in the world, so have some candy." And she goes, "I don't want candy. Dad, I want real food." Oh, such an amazing moment. She knew that she could have candy, but she didn't want candy. She was in touch with what her body wanted, which was real food, which is not candy. So the other Halloween story has to do with my other daughter, who she had a friend whose parents were like, "Well, when you come back from trick-or-treating, you may have two pieces of candy, and then we will confiscate your candy, and then we will give you two pieces a day until the end of all time." And so, as a result, my daughter's friend, we'll call her Lisa, came to our house where my attitude was like, "There's the candy," you know? And of course, it would just sit there because no one wanted it, because they knew they could have it, and they didn't want it. It wasn't even that good anyway. And then it would get thrown out, and no one cared or noticed. But Lisa, whose parents came from the attitude of, you know, sugar is death and sugar is poison, she came over and she must have snuck, like, God knows how many pieces of candy. Like, I don't know, she must have eaten 20 pieces of candy because she knew it was going to get taken away from her. And she got a stomach ache, and, the evening did not end well for Lisa. But both of these are reminders of how when you are deprived or you think you are going to be deprived, you're just going to have more of it. But when you can have it, you can choose if you want it, and if you want it, how much. Okay, tip number four. How are we doing on time? Just a couple more minutes. Living a zombie life. Do you feel like you're the walking dead, doing the same thing day after day, not truly enjoying life to the fullest? Gotta bring yourself to life. Bring yourself back to life. So think about one thing that you've been waiting to do one day when I lose weight, when I fit into that, when I have a boyfriend, when I graduate, when I'm married, when I have kids, when I get that better job. Start working towards that thing today. Here are some tips on how to kind of bring yourself back to life and do things that you want to do. One is, don't worry about what other people will think. Maybe you do worry. You know, maybe you don't want to look silly in front of other people. You're afraid they'll judge you. Guess what? Other people don't think about you nearly as much as you think they do. They're usually very busy thinking about themselves, wondering what you think about them. And you are not a mind reader, so you do not know what other people are thinking or what they're thinking about you. And if they are judging you for being silly or weird or whatever, then they're people you don't need to know anyway. In the words of the great Dr. Seuss, be who you are and say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind. And I think that is a good place for us to stop today. I will continue with more of these, even though next week it won't be Halloween. It is good for any... These tips are good for any day of the year. So thank you for joining me today here on LA Talk Radio on the Dr. Nina Show. I'm here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific. And if you want more resources and you want to join my online community, check out my website, Dr. Nina Inc., D-R-N-I-N-A-I-N-C, drninainc.com. Follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Dr. Nina Inc., and I have all kinds of free downloads and inspiration and tips and lots of stuff. You can connect with other people all over the world who are part of the Dr. Nina community. I would love to have you there, and I'll see you next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.